Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Second Court of Appeals sitting in Denton County. We feel honored and privileged to be here this afternoon and to have so many people who have come to watch the arguments here today. I understand there's a lot of students here today, and we welcome you, and we're going to have an opportunity at the conclusion of the arguments to answer questions for you. Just in case you don't know about courtroom demeanor, it is important that you remain quiet, that you remain in your seats, and that you do not use your cell phones in any manner, such as a recording device or video or anything such as that. So with that, we'll get started with our first case, if the clerk will call the case at this time.
The court will now call City of Carrollton, Texas versus Mylon Hamblett et al. May it please the court, Mr. Frederick Fritz Plotz will argue for the appellant. Mr. Michael Bennett will argue for the appellee.
All right. We shall.
Weston.
Weston? Okay, thank you, sir. Well, we shall begin. Mr. Quast.
May it please the court, Fritz Quast. We have the City of Carrollton, a little bit north of the City of Arlington. With respect to the issues that are before the court today, I'm going to, at least in my argument, unless the court has specific questions, I'm going to, of course, focus on where the majority of the briefing occurred in this case, which is concerning issue one, which is concerning takings, the takings theory asserted by the appellees in this case. Another thing I want to touch very briefly with the court, and that is I make some arguments in my briefing that essentially says that the allegations contained, whether it's concerning the Texas Tort Claims Act claim or the takings claim, I argue that their pleadings are insufficient. I continue.
Fritz, can you slow down?
I'm so sorry.
Air, please.
I've got 6 cups of coffee this morning. So with respect to the pleading, I make some arguments that the pleadings are insufficient. I still believe that. However, if the court decides that the pleadings are insufficient and they do not believe that they've pled themselves out of court, which is very likely, the only thing I get is a trip back down to the trial court and they get another chance to amend their pleadings. They've done that a lot in this case, but I would prefer that we focus on the evidence. So even though I make some arguments, I prefer that the court assume that the pleadings are sufficient, and then we go to the next level, which is to concern whether we have disproved their pleadings and whether they've raised a fact issue. I am not going to sit here and quote ad nauseum the case law that governs the takings issue at issue in this case, because I don't know how good the court's memory is, but this very panel, we had a very similar issue and a very similar case in the City of Keller versus Hall. I know that the court is very familiar with the standards that apply here, and I don't know if you remember, but I will go ahead and tell you, this is not a legal term, but I lost that case very handily. So a majority of my argument today is going to be trying to convince the court why this case is different, and it very much is. So for the purposes of Article 1, Section 17 of the Texas Constitution, the government entity acts intentionally. In other words, of course, the court knows you have to act intentionally to take or damage someone's property to be liable under the Constitution. But that only happens when the government knows that a specific act is causing identifiable harm, or that the specific property damage was substantially certain to result from the act. The government entity is substantially certain that its actions will damage property only when the damage is necessarily instant to or necessarily a consequential result of the entity's action. And this is the most important part. This is from San Antonio versus Pollock. The government knowledge must be determined at the time it acted, not with the benefit of hindsight. In a case very similar to the City of Keller versus Hall matter, 4 days after the city filed its principal brief in this case, on June the 12th, 2015, the Texas Supreme Court handed down an opinion in Harris County Flood Control District versus Kerr. It is much like the Hall case, a takings case premised on the approval of upstream development without mitigation or flood control. So in other words, we're allowing upstream developers to build property, to put streets and driveways in that increases impervious cover, but we're not making them keep that water on the property. So it's going into the creeks and it's damaging people downstream. Again, this opinion was handed down 4 days and I addressed it somewhat in the reply brief. The facts are very simple. Flooding is occurring in a area of Harris County. I know that's shocking, but it happens down there. And essentially the county and the flood control district adopted some plans in 74, 88, and I believe sometime in the mid-90s, which essentially said, look, this is a problem. If we allow development to occur unmitigated, if you don't fix the channels, widen them, or require each development to have on-site retention, in other words, keep the water on the property until it evaporates or releases slowly, we're going to have some problems. Later, although there's a fact issue in the case, those government entities approved upstream development without mitigation. This is what the Supreme Court said. Evidence exists that the entities approved development without appropriately mitigating it, and that at the time they deviated from their early policy of requiring on-site detention ponds. There's also evidence that abandoned plans protecting its 100-year floods for plans targeting the 10-year floods. So in other words, what happened there was is we have knowledge imputed because the government decided to adopt a policy or to put forth a plan that they later acted inconsistent with. And then there was damages that resulted. So what we have is knowledge, an action that is inconsistent by the government, and then damage that came as a result. In that order. Another thing we need to take from, or should take from, the Kerr case is that government inaction, premising a takings liability on the lack of government action is not sufficient under Texas law. There are a number of Court of Appeals cases that I cited in the briefing, but I think we've got an indication from the Supreme Court in the Kerr opinion that they would also go that way. And the reason is this. In the dissenting opinion, in the four justice dissenting opinion, they very clearly try to characterize or they have a problem with premising the city's liability on an inaction, and that is, you failed to regulate upstream development. They said they had a problem with that, and if you look at some, there are at least four justices in Austin, that very clearly believe that you can't premise a taking on a government not doing something. But it's very important to note that the majority opinion, anytime they talk about how they couch the city's liability, in the majority opinion, they talk about a government action. In other words, you approved upstream development, and you didn't require on-site detention and retention. So, majority opinion very carefully says over and over again, this is a government action, this is a government action. So I think there's at least five justices down there that believe that you can't have takings liability based on a lack of government action. That is essentially what we have here, what the plaintiffs are trying to do here. We have a subdivision in the city of Carrollton that was approved. The plat was approved in 84 range. The streets, the water and the sewer were installed. The subdivision was accepted by the city. In other words, all the public dedications became city property about June the 12th of 1986. So at that point, if you're familiar with how this case goes, there was a slope from the creek. There was a retaining wall. There was a street above it. All that stuff, all of those aspects of the development were set by June 12, 1986. Appellees in this case are essentially attempting to pin liability on the fact that there are some imperfections in that arrangement and what was approved. But they are consistently pointing rules and regulations and city policy that were implemented after the subdivision was installed. So, you know, under the Kerr case, we need to have implementation of policy, an inconsistent government action, and the resulting damages. In this case, the first two elements are reversed. What they're trying to do is say, we had an action, in other words, approval of this subdivision, of the shape of these lots, of the slope of these lots, of the installation of the retaining wall. And then later we have policies that were adopted that were inconsistent.
Well, aren't what they really complaining about is the slope failure that was in 2009 and that the city thereafter failed to follow their professionals' recommendations?
Your Honor, the professionals' recommendations were that, again, let me just make sure the court understands. This is a retaining wall that is on private property. It was built on top of a sewer easement, but that does not make it public property.
Is the slope public property?
No. The portion of the slope that failed, let me be a little more precise there. The slope that failed underneath the retaining wall was partially on private property, partially on the Appley's lots. Some of the slope failure, it went underneath the wall, and part of it was indeed on the city right-of-way, the drainage easement behind these homes. That's absolutely true, Your Honor. But again, the question we need to ask ourselves is, what did the city do? And when it did it know that the result of that would be the failure of that slope? In other words, the things that caused the slope to fail had to do with the soil, many feet under the surface, have to do with the presence of water, all things that are not Latin, all things that you can't tell. And essentially,
but after 2009, you knew that was a problem.
Absolutely, absolutely. But again, we need to, that makes it a complaint of the city now that this has happened. We're not coming in, you're not repairing our private property. That is inappropriate takings claim. They need to point to something that we did before and that we foresaw intentionally that the damage would occur. So there are several things, and you know, the first bit of evidence, the most important bit of evidence, was the city after the slope failure occurred, we hired a geotechnical engineer to go out there and look at everything and say, and tell us what went wrong, because of course the Appley's were complaining. He came back and he just said, it's a slope failure. It's a landslide. These things happen. In an earlier portion of this case, we removed this case to federal court. Mr. Barnes testified, and I didn't ask him these questions. He was called by Appley's, Judge Bush in the Eastern District. He asked all the questions. Essentially, the testimony is this. There's nothing the city could have known or could have done to stop this. When the subdivision was installed, there's nothing they could have done or saw.
Does a retaining wall have anything to do with the slope failure?
No, it does not. And that's a good good recognition of the facts, Justice Walker. Essentially, the 2009 event, the slope failure, was not a failure of the retaining wall itself. It was a failure of the slope underneath the retaining wall. And then as a result of the mudslide, the retaining wall collapsed partially. But yes, that is absolutely true.
So it's the city's position that the slope failure would have happened regardless of the retaining wall?
Absolutely. There's a couple of things that we're talking about the specific policies they say that the city did not follow. There's something called a factor of safety, and essentially it is a way to measure the stability of a particular slope. It's above 1.5, it's a good slope. It's below 1.5, it's a bad slope. When it approaches 1, the slope is going to fail. In this case, there are some assertions that the city has a duty or right to keep all slopes in the city at a 1.5 factor of safety. That is not at all. There is something in the Uniform Building Code that says you need to design retaining walls such that the factor of safety, they resist shear, and the slope at the retaining wall has a factor of safety of 1.5. It is a design standard for retaining walls.
Chris, who designed the retaining wall?
Just don't know. We don't know. This retaining wall was installed and designed
by the city or by the
developer.
And this was according to, and the city had to approve it, right?
There is no record that the city ever approved the retaining wall. Essentially, what happened was
did the city require the retaining wall?
The city did not require the retaining wall. As a matter of fact, a retaining wall would have been required because the subdivision ordinance at that time required an alley. They would have required a retaining wall to make room for the alley, so to speak. But the city granted an alley waiver and said, developer, you don't have to put in a retaining wall. The developer, for whatever reason, did so. We can only speculate as to why that was. I think it was, of course, is to make more buildable area or flatter surface on the lots. But the city did not require the retaining wall to be installed. At the end of the process, the city received a maintenance bond from the developer, but it was not something that was required by the subdivision ordinance. It was just something that some problems started to, unless the court has.
You'll have an opportunity to come back and argue in rebuttal. Thank you very much, Mr. Quast. Mr. Weston?
If it pleases the court, I would like to start out being probably a little simplistic and pedantic. A slope is an angle, and anything on the slope has a tendency to fall off the slope. And the only way you can keep something on a slope is by taking certain steps to block it from moving. The slope itself has a tendency, because of gravity, to want to go flat. So what happens over history in the United States, in this area particularly, because we do have a lot of slopes here in Denton County, is there are generally accepted engineering standards for taking care of a slope. The standards involve an evaluation of the slope. For example, what is the composition of the slope? How much water is there, and is there a retaining wall that does it? And the engineering standards are basically uniform standards that are adopted for a particular area. The city of Carrollton has a department in charge of that. And these standards have been adopted by the city of Carrollton, but the standards always existed. And in the city of Carrollton's documents, it's an ordinance and it did an erosion plan. It basically said, if you don't follow our plans, you're going to have slope failures, which is exactly what happened. And what we're dealing with is a situation where you have the slope, there is dirt placed on top of the slope, and in our situation, the dirt went under our homeowner's property and out onto the Dudley Branch right away. The dirt that was moved went underneath the retaining wall. So there is no issue whatsoever in this case that on the city of Carrollton's right of way for Dudley Branch Creek, underneath it and some of us on top of it, is our people's property. It's their earth that was underneath there. And I asked the director of engineering as his attitude towards what was going on. How would you evaluate whether or not, or how you would put the earth back? I guess they're welcome to go in there and just dig it out and put it back on the property. That was the response that we received. Well, that response ignores the very standards that the city of Carrollton has, because the city of Carrollton has, you have to follow certain standards. In our instance, the specific instance that we have, the first question is, how do you keep water away from a slope where property houses have been built? The city of Carrollton has a uniform system where their streets and their alleys are the drainage ways. And in their ordinances, it says that a house has to be built, I think it's 1.5 feet above the level of the street so that water on the lot will flow onto the street. The houses along Barkley Drive, and that's what we're dealing with, on the creek side, all of them are below the level of Barkley Drive. They are the only houses in the subdivision that drain towards Dudley Branch Creek. So in that itself, it's a violation of their ordinance, but it compounds itself because they have, and again, it's generally accepted engineering standards as they testified to, and their own ordinances. They say you can put in a retaining wall, which is great. It will block the dirt. But if you're going to put in retaining wall and you are not having drainage going onto the street, you must put in French drains to remove the water that will otherwise accumulate. Because what happens if you have a retaining wall that has dirt here, when the water comes to the retaining wall, it acts like a dam. It has the effect of putting pressure on the retaining wall, but more dangerously, it has the effect of having the water go down into the earth. And in that situation, when you have water going into dirt that's below the surface, it goes in there and it acts like oil. It lubricates.
Let me ask you a question, Mr. Weston. This being an appeal of a denial of a plea to the jurisdiction filed by the city.
Yes.
It is incumbent on you to prove that the city took some action that they knew or reasonably were certain would cause the specific harm that resulted in this case.
Yes.
Where in the record are we going to find that proof?
You're going to see it in three different areas, I believe. The first area, as I said, as Mr. Foster was describing, in the approval of the plan, the way they did it, with the drainage going the way they did it, with a retaining wall that wasn't even designed. They have no plans for this. It wasn't properly designed. There isn't any proper drainage that goes on. And an improper slope. There's a requirement in the ordinances that the slope on the outside of the retaining wall has to be a certain elevation, because the lesser the slope, the more support it gives. Okay, there's the fundamental time. The other thing is
that the position is that the city's action was approving the plat in the 1980s.
That's what I'm getting to. They did more than that. They assumed for themselves the retaining wall. One of the difficulties that we have in this case is documents don't exist. We found a document in their records that said the city did the following things with regard to the retaining wall. They approved the plans. They reviewed the plans, they changed the plans, they inspected it, they accepted the retaining wall, and they accepted a performance bond, a maintenance bond on the property. The director of two directors of engineering, the previous one and the current one, both said that is what the city does when it owns the retaining wall. It owns the retaining wall by its own standards. The problem we have is all we have is of the design of the retaining wall is a little bitty picture that says construct retaining wall. There are no plans in the way you would normally expect in the plan. The second thing is, during the course of the years, knowing that you have a situation where these houses are not draining onto Barkley Drive and they have no French drain system in it, they continued to maintain Barkley Drive in such a way that the water from our clients' properties could not get onto Barkley Drive. Similarly, on the other end, they continued to maintain the slope on Dudley Branch Creek, and they're the only ones who could maintain it. They failed to maintain it at the very levels that they required. And then further, and the evidence is ample in the record, there were problems starting with this retaining wall in 1987. Now, presumably in 1987 they did another geotechnical engineering investigation. There are no records. We don't know what they did, but we do know, based on the objective observations of the retaining wall, that experts have said, if you looked at that retaining wall as an expert, you know it was coming down. Yet they continued to maintain the retaining wall exactly as they had, and they continued to maintain the slope exactly as they had, And then they continued making Barclay Drive, allowed all the water to go into our client's property.
Okay, so all that to me is sounding like a negligence claim, not a takings claim. You're saying that the city took earth? Is that, that's the basis of your takings claim?
Look, it has to be. You have to take something. And okay. we're saying they took the properties by the fact that the earth went out from underneath our properties. The property sunk 7 feet. You've got basically a cliff in your backyard. That was the taking. Is it a, we really haven't gotten to the point, is that the taking of the total property or is that a taking of the earth? The effect is going to be
How is that a taking for a public use?
Because, and this is in the 1990s, they had a problem with the wall. And the city engineer at that point in time says, you have a problem with the wall, and you have to follow certain criteria. Be able to continue developing property, developing these properties. They didn't follow any of the criteria, and yet they allowed the lots to be built upon. The purpose is to increase the revenue to the city, because none of the people before you today, their houses were built after the warning that basically says you've got to be real careful if you're going to build anything on this slope. They continued to build it, and they've been getting the revenue, and getting money is a public purpose.
How did the city not follow its engineer's recommendations?
I'm sorry.
How did the city not follow its engineer's recommendations? And isn't that an inaction and not an action?
Well, how did they not follow it? First his recommendation was that you don't allow any swimming pools in, you locate the houses in a particular way, and they simply ignored his instructions. That's what we understand occurred. That's what the engineer understood. The houses should not have been built the way they were built and approved by the city. This is after 1993, where he gave his warnings. Again, it's cited in our brief, the specific. The interesting situation that we face in this case is all three of us are, both parties are citing three Supreme Court cases quite extensively. And we cite them for the proposition of supporting our positions, and they are the City of Dallas versus Jennings, City of San Antonio versus Pollock, and City of Keller versus Wilson. And these cases correctly set out the standards that apply. And it goes to the issue of intent, it goes to the issue of action. But the important thing that we believe exists in these cases is the contrast between these cases and the situations that we face. In the City of Wilson, the city basically violated one of its ordinances by approving the property on the recommendations of three engineers. Said, it's all right to do it. They did it. In our situation, we have presented evidence that what they did is they violated the recommendations of the city. In the situation with the City of Dallas, we have a instance where there was a sewer pipe that backed up. There was no liability because you couldn't find that there was an expectation that something would happen in that particular situation. By contrast, we have an ordinance and an master erosion plan where they specifically, especially in the master erosion plan, they specifically say if you don't do these things, you're going to have slope failure. We have the slope failure because they didn't do it. And the final one is the City of Pollock. Our City of San Antonio versus Pollock, where the Pollocks were living next to a landfill, and there was methane gas coming out, and it was brought to the situation was brought to the attention of the city, and they did something. It didn't work, and they did something. It didn't work, and they did something. In our situation, we have an instance where the city controls the slope, which is one of the important elements. It owns the retaining wall and controls the drainage. And in 1987, 1993, into the 2000s, the city had continual warnings and did absolutely nothing. And so we believe that the situation that we face in this case is very different from the situation that Mr. Quast is describing. And by the way, I'm not going to be talking about the Harris County case. There are too many amicus curiae on a motion for rehearing. I'm not sure that's a valid case to rely on at this point. So,
You have 2 minutes.
Yeah. I guess the question really comes down to what are the obligations of the city when it controls all the elements that its expert found caused the slope hit? The drainage, the retaining wall, and the slope. And those create fact issues in this case. Because under the authorities, you have a situation where this could be a inverse condemnation, a taking. And we believe that
didn't the expert just say that this was Mother Nature? Mother Nature caused this?
Absolutely.
Because of the decomposition of the dirt?
Absolutely. And I agree with that completely. That's what I was talking about when I started. Mother Nature wants this to be flat and anything on it to fall off. We, coming into an area that's developed like that, city adopts standards, not for us as the homeowners, but we didn't know the standards existed, and we couldn't control it. But the city adopts standards so that Mother Nature won't do exactly what happened here. That's the purpose of the standards. That's the purpose of the engineering standards, so you don't have a slope that everything falls off of it and it goes flat. That is exactly what happens. And that's what Mr. Barnes, their expert, is referring to. He's talking about what he observed. And he's saying, well, did you cause this? Was it done correctly? And he makes one very important comment. He makes a comment and he says, wasn't this approved by an engineer? And he says, well, I assume so. The reality is, it was never approved. The way they did the retaining wall, the slope, everything else, it was approved by the city, but it was not done on the basis of a professional engineer giving its opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Weston. Mr. Quast?
Hopefully very briefly. Just a few things I want to point out to the court. I'm sure you're free to ask what questions you like. Talking about the standard that is adopted in the city ordinance concerning essentially you need to have the floor elevation of residences at least a foot and a half above the curb. That makes sure all the water drains away from the house. That is not the case here in this subdivision. Again, we have the street, Barclay Drive, the floors of the houses are a little bit below, and then there's the further descent into the creek, where the retaining wall is, and then the creek. Now, again, this subdivision was approved. In other words, all the streets were laid out, all of the dirt work was done, all the water and sewer was approved in June the 12th of 1986. That means the retaining wall was there, everything is as it is. The standard to which they are citing, it requires the floor elevation to be a foot and a half above the curb, was not adopted by the city of Carrollton until May the 12th of 1987, almost 11 months later. The only standard that they ever cite to that existed at the time this subdivision was installed, is what I'll just call it, is the standard from the Uniform Building Code. And again, the Uniform Building Code, the 1985 version, was adopted by the city on June the 3rd, 86. So, 9 days before the subdivision was finally installed. So what we have in the record is something that probably didn't apply when those plans were approved. I can't find a copy of the 1979 Uniform Building Code. It's out there, but for the purpose of this appeal, let's assume that standard was in the 1979 UBC. All that standard says, again, it is a design standard for retaining walls. It says you need to design a retaining wall to resist a lateral shear such that the slope at the retaining wall is 1.5. The record is replete again and again and again. Our expert, their expert, everyone else. This was not. The May 2009 event was a slope failure underneath the retaining wall. The retaining wall broke because the earth beneath it failed. The retaining wall did its job. It was designed appropriately. Concerning there were some recommendations. There have been problems with this retaining wall all along. There were some cracks that formed right after it was installed. The city solicited the developer to come back and fix it. He said no. The city had hired someone to go out, repair it. In 1994, upstream from the... What's the part of the questions I was seeing?
Okay, you have 2 minutes. Saying you...
I miss the lights.
I know. We do too.
Yeah, in 1994, there were some problems that occurred upstream from the 2009 slope there. That house, and it was at 1343 Barclay Drive. If you look at Google Maps, I know that's not the record, but it's apparent from the record that that house was built at the very back extreme of the lot. There was a driveway. There were some cracks that formed in the wall. And Tim Tumulty, city engineer at the time, said, look, we need to make sure that houses are built as far forward on the lot as they can be. And oh, by the way, if anybody wants to put swimming pools in, they need to consider some... He didn't say what those design standards would be. He just said they need to be aware of this problem. So if they want to install something to make sure that the swimming pool doesn't move, they need to do that. There's no evidence in the record or otherwise that the city ever went against these recommendations. Every house that was installed, or excuse me, that was built after 1994 was built at the building line, as far forward as you can go on the lot. You can go farther, but you have to ask for a variance from the Zoning Board of Adjustment. That is something the property owners do, not the city. So the recommendations that were put forth in 1994, they were always followed. With respect to the Kerr case, I just want to point out, a lot of governments in Texas are freaking out over the Kerr case, and there are a number of amicus opinions out there. Excuse me, amicus briefs that have been filed after the opinion in support of the motion for rehearing. The things that I'm citing are accepting the bad news for governments as true. So I think, of course, going to have to watch what happens in that case, of course, but I believe what I've said concerning what the case stands for is appropriate. Unless the court has any questions, I'll sit down.
Any further questions? Judge Stephan? Walker? Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, gentlemen, for your arguments, for your briefing. Your case is submitted. We very much appreciate you traveling to Denton to accommodate us so that we could come sit in Denton. But with that, you are excused to go.